passages and you read them and you think, what in the world am I ever going to say about this really challenging passage? And there's sometimes that you look at it and you go, how in the world am I ever going to distill this down into one 45-minute sermon? And then you think, it's the Lord's Prayer. This one I could preach on for weeks. It's kind of like saying, marine biology, discuss. So I'm just going to ignore large portions of this, and I'm not even really going to apologize about that, and I think that most of you will be okay with that because you'd like to have your dinner tonight. And I think that really some of this we've talked about a lot before. I think that I don't really need to spend a lot of time talking about the fact that Jesus talked to God as Father and told us to do that. I think we understand that. And I think that last week we talked a lot about forgiveness. So I think we don't need to discuss forgiveness a lot today, except only to say that keep in mind that when Jesus said, forgive us our trespasses as we forgive those who trespass against us, that basically means inasmuch as we forgive those who sin against us, you can forgive us. So, and as much as we hold those sins that people have done against us, that's how much you're going to hold against us. If you have unforgiveness, then I won't forgive you. Let go, and I'll let go of yours. Keep, and I'll keep a tally of yours. That's kind of a heavy thing to keep in mind. And that's all I'm going to say on that. But let's look at some other things here. Let's look at the fact that the disciples said, teach us to pray like you pray, like John taught his disciples how to pray. Well, that makes sense. If you've been walking around with the Messiah, this incredibly powerful spiritual warrior who walks around and casts out demons and heals the sick and works these miracles through his incredibly intimate relationship with the Lord, wouldn't you like to know how he does it? Doesn't he do it via his relationship with God? Hey, will you teach us how to have that relationship? Don't you have that relationship because of your prayer life? Teach us how to have that prayer life, please. Okay, here's how. You know, there are those who say that any kind of prayer you pray by rote, by just routine, by memory, is a dead prayer. That everything must be just kind of impromptu and prayed from the Spirit. And I would say that Jesus would say that's not correct. Because Jesus said, when you pray, pray this way. And gave them this. Pray this way. Okay? I say that it's not the words that you pray, it's the Spirit that you pray from. And if you're praying from a dead place, it doesn't matter what words that you pray, you're praying from a dead place. Likewise, if you are praying with a lively spirit that is trying with all that you have to communicate with God, it doesn't matter if you're reading straight from the book, it doesn't matter what book you're reading from. If your spirit is trying to communicate with your God, then that works. Because it's about having a relationship. And if it's you trying to communicate with your God, trying through what way you can, then that's what it's about. It's about having a relationship, having a dialogue, having a conversation. We all bring our baggage with us to our relationships, whether they be our friendships, whether they be our romantic relationships, whether they be our marriages, whether they be our brotherly and sisterly relationships, we all have our baggage that life gives us. that baggage carries through to our divine relationships. And sometimes you need something that's written down to jumpstart you into a conversation. Sometimes we even have these little things that we teach people who they're not very good with people of the opposite sex, and we say, here, these are conversation starters. These are icebreakers. Start off by saying these things. Once you go through these, maybe it'll jumpstart the conversation. You can get going. The Lord's Prayer has been used as a primer for prayer for over 2,000 years now. In fact, it's been used in some cases 7-8 times a day by certain Christians, because Jesus said, pray this way. When you pray, pray this way. Let's look at just a couple of the things that he says. And let's not get bogged down by the fact that Luke doesn't use exactly the same language as Matthew does. Okay? Let's not get bogged down by that. Because frankly, okay, let's not assume that the disciples only asked him once how to do this. Because they messed everything else up. Why do you think they got it right the first time they asked him how to pray? You think they had to ask him twice how to pray? Maybe 3, 4, 5 dozen times? I think probably they asked him again and again how to pray. So, why do you think that he answered him exactly the same way each time? Because I can assure you, the only way you're going to hear exactly the same sermon I'm giving now is if you listen to the recording. Because I'm not going to give it the same way a second time. And I wouldn't think that Jesus would give it exactly the same way a second time either. So let's look at hallowed be thy name. Hallowed be your name. Because I think most of us, I think all of us kind of gloss over that. Our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Hallowed be thy name. Kind of gloss over that as quickly as possible. Hallowed be thy name. My children can say the Lord's Prayer. I don't think they have any idea what it means to hallow anything. To hallow means to make holy. Hallowed be thy name. Let thy name be holy. It's kind of ironic. Jesus says something thoroughly revolutionary. Talk to God and call him Dad, and then say, let your name be holy. Speak to him familiarly, but then say, set your name aside as holy. That's really completely contrary. Speak to him as a friend and then say, help me set you aside as holy, as set apart for a special, unique purpose. Remember, a name carried the essence of a being. A name was not just a name. It carried something of what someone was. That's why when God set apart Abram, he changed his name from Abram to Abraham. When Jesus called Simon, he changed his name to Peter. When we look at Sarai to Sarah, when we look at all these figures in the Old Testament, their names are significant. It's not just, you know, here's Bob. No, it's, you know, this man's name means God judges. This man's name means my Lord, my God is the Lord. This man's name means God is my judge. These people's names had divine meaning to them. This man's name means God hears my prayer. This person's name means he's not mine, God's not loved. I mean, their names had real significance. That's why when Jesus is walking around saying, you know, I am the good shepherd, I am the true vine, the Jews were going crazy because he's taking the divine name and applying it to himself. That's when he said in John chapter 6, truly, truly, before Abraham ever was, I am. The Jews just lose it. They tear their garments, they pick up rocks, they draw back, and they're like, which way did he go? They were ready to stone him. He was committing blasphemy. He was committing sacrilege. They were ready to stone him, and he had disappeared because he was using the divine name. God is telling us, hey, this name is holy. We need to think of it as holy. Now, how do we do that? We need to remember that we are part of a divine plan. Now, let's look at the next line because it's going to carry through here. Your kingdom come. Let your kingdom come. That sounds really passive. I'm going to sit here. Lord, let your kingdom come. Let it just wash over me. Prayer is a conversation. It's a dialogue. What is dialoguing about that? We're kind of trapped by our old King James language. Let thy kingdom come, Lord. Let thy will be done, Lord. How about, Lord, help me make your kingdom come. Lord, give me the grace to make your kingdom come. Let's look at this. Let's look at an example here. Okay, you're a baby Christian. Lord, let thy kingdom come. All right, fine. You're a new convert. You don't really have any idea what that means. You don't really know much about the kingdom of God. All right, fine. You've been in the kingdom of God all your life. You've been sitting in a pew or a chair, as the case may be, for decades. Don't you think you should be doing more than just sitting here saying, let your kingdom come? Shouldn't you be bringing the kingdom maybe a little? Maybe, somehow? Consider this. I have four children. When John turned 3 on Friday, walks in to the kitchen and says, I want milk. That's really cute. And I will go to the fridge and I will get him some milk and I will pour him a little glass and I will say, what do you say? And he will say, peace. And I will give him the glass, but I won't let go of it until he says, thank you. And when he says thank you, I will let go of it, and he will drink it, and I will take it back from him, and I will set it up on the counter, and I will put the milk back in the fridge, and I will close it. And that is an appropriate thing to do. When Megan, who was about to turn 19, comes into the kitchen and says, I want milk, I will say, so? It is not appropriate for me to open the fridge, take out a, pour her a glass, not give it to her until she says please, let go. These are not appropriate actions. Why? Because one's 3 and one's 19. These are not appropriate. Okay? Now, what is appropriate is for let's see, for me to, maybe for Nathaniel, to let him hold the glass and pour the milk for him, for Catherine to get the glass for her, which is a little too high for her to reach, and then make sure that she doesn't pour too much, okay? And so there's different stages that are involved here. But the fact is that it's not appropriate for one person to be doing the same thing, whether they're a toddler and a grown-up. In fact, it's come to my attention recently that when an adult, say with a wife and four children, sitting at the table asks his mother to get him a glass of iced tea, that maybe gets some dirty looks from his wife. I don't quite know what that's all about. Perhaps there's something inappropriate about that. Maybe there should be some getting up and getting it yourself going on there. There is spiritual maturity that goes with praying the Lord's Prayer. For a new convert, let your will be done, maybe a completely passive statement. For someone who has been in the faith for quite some time, there needs to be some activity there. It's not just, let your will be done. It's, Lord, give me the grace to see how I can make your will be done. There are opportunities to let your kingdom come all around me. Show me how to do it. Lord, there are people who need you all around me. Don't just let me walk through the world going, I hope that person sees Jesus today. Oh, I hope that person sees Jesus today. Let me show them. Help me to show them. Help me to see how I can show them. Help me bless them. Let me see how to bless them. I want to look at one other part of the Lord's Prayer. Give us this day our daily bread. This is, give me what I need for today. Too often, well, let's see this. How often do you pray once in the morning and are done? Until maybe you go to bed at night. And then you think, all right, Lord, how did I do today? Well, it kind of, I was good up until about 9 o'clock in the morning, and then it all started to swan dive. Okay? When I woke up in the morning, I had a nice hour-long prayer time, and then I got to work, and then it was, okay? Give me what I need for the day. Give me my daily bread. Give me my sustenance. Give me what I need. Okay? I'm going to use this as a comparison using a home improvement project. And the comparison that I'm going to use is a home improvement project done by myself and a home improvement project done by my father. Okay? I can do this because he's not here. Actually, he comes out looking way better in the project, but never mind that. Okay. The primary difference between a home improvement project done by my father and a home improvement project done by me is not years of experience and way more technical expertise. It's the fact that he lives right across the street from Lowe's, all right? I live like 10 miles from any kind of hardware store, which means that when the project goes south, which it always does, all right? And it always does. When we're doing a home improvement project at his house, there's some grumbling, we hop in the car, we go across the street, within 30 minutes we're back on track, everything goes well, we're done for about another hour and a half, and then we're grumbling, we're back in the street, we're going to Lowe's, we're coming back, and with about a half an hour, we're back on track, and we're done. Okay? Life's good. All right. On the other hand, at my house, working, going well, something goes wrong, which it always does, right? Always. Why do we have a plan B? Because plan A never works. So when plan A goes south, rather than getting in the car and going 10 miles down the road to the hardware store, I go into the garage to the bucket of stuff that I have that's like, you know, when you do one of those like home build kits, when you like put together the entertainment center, and they always have like the leftover parts. I have all of those in a bucket, and I dump out the bucket on my kitchen counter, and I start rummaging around through parts, trying to figure out if I have anything left over that might possibly work. So I need one thing, and I'm trying to figure out if I can possibly use maybe a screw from a crib, maybe a fan belt from a vacuum cleaner that we threw away 6 years ago, maybe a barrel washer from a child's playground, and see if any of those will work for this one particular thing that I need. Okay? So, the difference is, when we run into a problem, we go to the store and we get what we need and we come back home and we fix it. Over here, when we run into a problem, we sit here and wallow in our mess and see if we can figure out something on our own. Now, in your head, which do you do when you run into trouble during your day? Do you go to the source and get help? Or do you try and figure it out on your own with leftover junk? Anyway, so, all right, so, God didn't say when you pray once a day and only once using this prayer, pray this way. He said, when you pray, pray this way. And when he said, give us this day our daily bread, he didn't say you only have to eat once a day. He said, give us our daily bread, give us what we need to eat for the day, not only once. When I leave for work, I pack a lunch. Or my wife brings it to me, but never mind that. I expect to eat when I go to work. I don't really expect that when I leave, I'm not going to eat till I come home for dinner. And I certainly don't expect that when I leave for work in the morning, I'm not going to eat till I go to bed at night. Could you imagine how grumpy you would be when that happened? Could you imagine how rotten your day would be? Think about these things. Think about just, we don't have time to go through the whole Lord's Prayer. That could be a whole teaching series for later on in the year. We might do that some other time. But just think about these little aspects of the Lord's Prayer. Think about keeping the Lord's Prayer holy. Keeping the Lord holy. Keeping this aspect of our lives holy. Father, we want this portion of our life to be holy. We want our purpose in life to be holy. We want your will to be done and your kingdom to come, and we recognize our part in it. We're not just passively sitting by going, Lord, let your kingdom come like a nice big wave that washes over me. But rather, Lord, let me see how I can bring about your kingdom. I'm not going to do it all on my own. I'm not going to do it in some major triumphant way. But Lord, let me bring about some little victory in this person's life, or that person's life, or my coworker's life, or this student's life, or someone's life. Let me bring about some small little victory for your kingdom in this person's life. I don't have to win the war, but give me a little battle that I can win for you today. I don't have to make the whole big glass of milk myself, but I should be doing more than just walking up and saying, milk.